Goodman, host of Democracy Now! Please support our independent journalism at democracynow.org. That's democracynow.org. Your donation will be matched dollar for dollar. Thank you so much. New York, this is Democracy Now!
I'm standing today in Tel HaShomer base and I am refusing to enlist. I believe that slaughter cannot solve slaughter. The criminal attack on Gaza won't solve the atrocious slaughter that Hamas executed. Violence won't solve violence, and that is why I refuse.
As Israel warns its war on Gaza will continue for many months, we'll look at war resistance inside Israel. Earlier this week, an 18-year-old Israeli was sentenced to 30 days in prison for refusing to enlist. We'll speak to a Palestinian member of the Knesset who was suspended for criticizing Israel's assault on Gaza. Then we'll speak to the founder of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund.
I just learned of two children who were killed this week with their families in the Gaza Strip who were brought to the United States in 2019 for free medical care. That makes six children that we've brought for treatment in the United States who've been killed in Gaza since October 7th. We're calling for an immediate ceasefire and an end to the killing of unarmed civilians in the Gaza Strip.
Then to Mexico. Secretary of State Tony Blinken, Homeland Security Chief Alejandro Mayorkas met with Mexican President Andres Manuel López Obrador on Wednesday to discuss migration and the border.
The visit of Blinken and Mayorkas to Mexico is another sign that the Biden administration is caving to Republican demands to further criminalize and expel migrants and asylum seekers.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's military has launched its most intense raids in the occupied West Bank since Israel began its assault on the Gaza Strip following Hamas's attack on October 7th. Overnight, Israeli forces raided 10 cities, including Ramallah, where at least one Palestinian was shot dead and 15 others wounded during confrontations with Israeli soldiers. The Palestine Monetary Authority says Israeli troops targeted at least six money exchange companies, seizing over $2 million worth of funds. Meanwhile, disturbing details are emerging about an Israeli drone strike on the Nor Shams refugee camp that killed six Palestinians. The head of the Tulkara Medical Syndicate reports Israeli soldiers stopped and boarded ambulances carrying people injured in the bombing. One patient was reportedly stabbed in the neck, while two others were removed from ambulances and severely beaten. The World Health Organization warns tens of thousands of Palestinians are fleeing Israeli attacks on central and southern Gaza as devastating airstrikes continue to kill civilians. Palestinian health officials say the latest assaults have killed at least 50 people in areas including Beit Lahia, Khan Yunis, and Maghazi. Among those killed are two more media workers, TV journalist Mohammed Khair al-Din and his camera operator Ahmed Khair al-Din, were killed when Israel's military attacked a residential square in Beit Lahia. Gaza's government media office says they are the 104th and 105th journalists killed in the Gaza Strip since October. Meanwhile, Gaza's public health crisis continues to deepen, with starving residents increasingly stopping aid shipments in search of food and drinkable water. Hundreds of thousands of Gazans have been effectively cut off from medical care. Sean Casey, emergency medical team coordinator for the World Health Organization, says hospital capacity is at about 20% of what it was in early October.
So almost all of the hospital beds, almost all of the hospital services have stopped functioning, either because the facilities themselves have been affected, because the staff have been forced to flee, because they run out of power, or they run out of medical supplies, and or the staff have not been able to access them.
The United Nations warns some 300,000 people in Sudan have been forced to flee the state of Jazeera as paramilitaries with the feared rapid support forces have pressed further south from the capital, Khartoum, expanding their war against Sudan's army while pillaging supplies of food and valuables. On Wednesday, the leader of the RSF, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, said he had met with Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni in his first appearance outside Sudan since he launched a campaign of violence aimed at the ouster of Sudan's ruling military junta. The RSF has since been accused of carrying out a genocide in West Darfur. 7 million people are displaced. Almost two-thirds of Sudan's population, or about 30 million people, are in need of humanitarian assistance. An Associated Press investigation has found Russian occupation authorities vastly and deliberately undercounted the number of people killed by severe flooding that followed the catastrophic explosion last June at the Novokakhovka Dam on the Dnipro River, the southern Kherson region. Ukraine blames Russian forces for blowing up the dam to counter Ukraine's planned counteroffensive. Russia claims 59 people died in the disaster, but an AP report puts the true number far higher, with hundreds dead in the Russian-occupied town of Oleshki alone. On Wednesday, the Biden administration announced a military aid package to Ukraine worth $250 million, including air defense systems, rockets from mobile launchers, anti-armor munitions, and millions of rounds of ammunition. It's the last aid package to Ukraine the U.S. will provide unless Congress approves the Biden administration's request for billions of dollars in additional funding to Ukraine. The world's 15 largest weapons manufacturers have seen revenues soar in the 2020s as governments place new orders for heavy weaponry and record supplies of ammunition. That's according to the Financial Times, which found in a new analysis such expenditures soared last year by more than 10% compared to 2 years prior as the U.S. and NATO allies poured billions of dollars worth of arms into Ukraine. A global benchmark for the weapons industry's share prices is up 25% over the last year, while a European Arms and Aerospace Stock Index is up by over 50% over the same period. Here in New York, at least 26 people were arrested Wednesday as they blocked an expressway leading to JFK Airport in a nonviolent civil disobedience protest demanding a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Protesters linked arms and held banners reading, "Right to Return, Right to Remain," and "Divest from Genocide," snarling traffic to New York's busiest airport for about 20 minutes during the busiest travel week of the year. In Los Angeles, 36 people were arrested at a simultaneous protest that blocked traffic near Los Angeles International Airport. Argentina's far-right president, Javier Milei, said Tuesday his government would not renew contracts for more than 5,000 employees hired this year before his inauguration earlier this month. The mass firings follow a presidential decree by Milei last week that seeks to massively deregulate Argentine businesses, privatize state-run industries, slash workers' wages while massively cracking down on civil liberties, including the right to hold protests. On Wednesday, thousands defied the ban on protests to take to the streets of Buenos Aires. This is Eduardo Belliboni, leader of the progressive workers' rights organization Polo Obrero.
There's a violation of workers' fundamental rights in Argentina. They are attacking our wages. People are being denied the right to protest brutal adjustments that will affect the poor. Workers are suffering wage cuts by a government that benefits the interests of the big business owners.
Michigan's Supreme Court has ruled Donald Trump can remain on the Michigan primary ballot. The court declined to hear a lawsuit arguing the former president was constitutionally ineligible for public office after inciting the January 6th insurrection. Last week, Colorado's Supreme Court disqualified Trump, citing the insurrection clause of the 14th Amendment, which was written to prevent Civil War Confederates from returning to government. The Republican Party in Colorado has appealed the ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court, ensuring that Donald Trump's name will remain on the Colorado primary ballot since it has to be printed up in the next few weeks. A number of other states, including Maine, are hearing similar cases. On Wednesday, Trump filed a request for the Democratic Secretary of State of Maine to recuse herself from the case. Meanwhile, in Colorado, the FBI and local police are investigating a slew of threats targeting judges who voted last week to disqualify Trump from the 2024 ballot. In other Trump news, special counsel Jack Smith has asked a federal court to bar the former president from sowing disinformation in his federal 2020 election interference case trial. In a filing, prosecutors wrote, quote, the court should not permit the defendant to turn the courtroom into a forum in which he propagates irrelevant disinformation and should reject his attempt to inject politics into this proceeding. On the campaign trail, Republican presidential hopeful Nikki Haley Wednesday did not cite slavery when asked what she believed caused the U.S. Civil War. Haley was fielding a question from a participant of a town hall meeting in Berlin, New Hampshire.
We need to have capitalism. We need to have economic freedom. We need to make sure that we do all things so that individuals have the liberties so that they can have freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom to do or be anything they want to be without government getting in the way.
Thank you. And in the year 2023, it's astonishing to me that you answer that question without mentioning the word slavery.
What do you want me to say about slavery?
No, you've answered my question. Thank you.
Next question.
Nikki Haley was the former governor of South Carolina. And the comedian and folk musician Tom Smothers has died at the age of 86. With his brother, he hosted the Smothers Brothers, a pioneering TV show in the 1960s, which made headlines for its fights over censorship with CBS for tackling topics like the civil rights movement and the Vietnam War. In 1967, the Smothers Brothers convinced CBS to allow folk singer Pete Seeger to appear on the show, even though he'd been blacklisted from TV since the 1950s. While CBS finally said yes, the network refused to air the segment after Pete Seeger sang out against the Vietnam War. In 2003, Pete Seeger appeared on Democracy Now! And talked about what happened.
Finally, in October, they said, okay, you can have him on. And I sang this song, waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. The tape was made in California, flown to New York, and in New York, they scissored the song out. And now the Smothers Brothers took to the print media and said, CBS is censoring our best jokes. They censored Seeger's best song. And they got some publicity.
You can see the whole interview at democracynow.org. CBS finally allowed Pete Seeger's performance to air months later, thanks in part due to pressure from Tom Smothers. Tom Smothers died at the age of 86 on Tuesday in Santa Rosa, California. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We'll be back after we hear Pete Seeger performing on the Smothers Brothers.
It was back in 1942. I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river. That's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy. The big fool said to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on. I forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging. We'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim.
Pete Seeger performing waist deep in the big muddy on the Smothers Brothers. The show's co-host Tom Smothers has died at the age of 86. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. As Israel is threatening to continue its assault on Gaza for many months, we begin today's show looking at resistance to the war inside Israel. On Tuesday, an 18-year-old Israeli teenager named Tal Mitnick was sentenced to 30 days in prison after he refused to enlist in the Israeli army. He spoke out against Israel's assault on Gaza before his sentencing on Tuesday.
I'm standing today in Tel HaShomer base and I am refusing to enlist. I believe that slaughter cannot solve slaughter. The criminal attack on Gaza won't solve the atrocious slaughter that Hamas executed. Violence won't solve violence, and that is why I refuse.
Last week, Tal Mitnick spoke to Navarra Media about why he decided to become a conscientious objector.
What led me was the realization that it's not just a couple soldiers that are bad soldiers or that enact violent occupation on Palestinians, but it's actually a whole system of violence, of pulling people into the army and making them work for the occupation and for oppressing Palestinians. A lot of my friends are serving and right now are in military service. And when I tell them my opinions, because I am their friend, they see the humanity in my positions and they see that I only want for there to be good in this place. I want security and I want peace for everyone. And when people get to know me, when people hear this opinion, this opinion is very humanistic and very normal. So this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to make more teens, make more young people hear this position that there is an alternative to the massacre that is happening right now in Gaza and to the massacre that Hamas committed on October 7th. There is an alternative in peace, of peace and nonviolence.
That was Tal Mitnick speaking to Ash Sarkar, the British journalist. He has now been sentenced to 30 days in prison for refusing to enlist. Israel's facing growing criticism for stifling anti-war voices. We're joined now by Aida Tuma Sliman. She's a Palestinian member of the Knesset from the Progressive Democratic Front for Peace and Equality, known as the Hadash Party. She was suspended from the Knesset last month for criticizing the Israeli military assault on Gaza. She is joining us now from Akko in northern Israel, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Aida Tuma Sliman. If you can start off by talking about the significance of Tal's resistance, but then go on to talk about the situation in Gaza today and why you were suspended. I mean, you're an elected leader of the Knesset. Who gets to suspend you?
Well, hi. Thank you for hosting me. Those who suspended me are the same people who are putting Tal now in prison because he refused to enlist himself to the army. Those who are ruling Israel, this government, very extreme right-wing government, who is refusing to hear any voice, anti-war voice, anybody who is opposing this bloody war. There are massive pressure used by the government in order to silence the voices who refuse to believe that military actions and wars and killing innocent people might get us anywhere or can be a way to solve the problem. I think it has been already a month since I was suspended by the so-called Ethics Committee, Parliamentarian Ethics Committee, who punished me for quoting testimonies from physicians from a Shifa hospital, which were published in the international media. And for that, I've been punished, not allowed to speak out in the Knesset or to participate in the committees for 2 months. One have passed already. Of course, this is not democratic, but when you see that the same government, the same Knesset is supporting a war that is killing more than 21,000 people, 70% of them children and women in Gaza, you understand that it's ridiculous to speak about democracy in such situation. Because launching such a war was as if a reaction to Hamas attack on the 7th of October, which also I don't see it as in any way legitimized to kidnap civilians, including children. But it's, of course, do not legitimize also this crazy war that has been going on in the last more than 2 months. It's already more than 80 days. So you can understand that when Tal refused to enlist himself, he is a unique voice in the Israeli society. For a young man to stand up against all the mainstream, and not only mainstream, but kind of consensus. Today, the situation in Israel is almost 90% of the society is in consensus of supporting the war. To stand up and to say that he will not take part in this war, he is not willing to be part of this military forces that are attacking, bombing in Gaza, it's a very brave position to take. It is not easy. I'm sure he will not be embraced or tolerated inside the military prison. But we have to also remember that he is the first one to do it during this war. We hopefully think that there are might be some young women and men who are finding other ways to avoid enlisting themselves, but at least they are not going publicly about it or turning it to a political issue. But he's still a unique voice and not the majority voice, for my regret.
So, MK, Aida, if you could also talk about, you've mentioned the fact that, you know, 90% of Israeli society is supporting the war, but there is a minority that is opposed to it. And you've mentioned that this number, the number that is critical of the war, has increased in recent weeks. If you could explain where that resistance is most prominent and what you think has led to an increase in this opposition.
Well, from day one, we understood that forces that democratic forces, the anti-war, anti-occupation forces that existed before the 7th of October will, with no regard to the shock that happened on the 7th of October, will still continue to believe in peace, will still continue to believe that occupation should be ended and the war should be ended. In the beginning, there were, as I mentioned to you, also a lot of anger and fears of people that avoided having clear activities against this war. Most of the activities were to put pressure to release the kidnapped Israelis in Hamas, at Hamas in Gaza. But more and more people started to understand that, first of all, even this war, if they thought that the war, the Israeli government have persuaded them in the beginning that this war is needed also to release the kidnapped Israeli. Today they understand, especially with the testimonies of the released hostages, telling how dangerous it was to stay under the shelling and the bombard of Israel. So they understand that this war, first of all, is rescuing the security of the hostages who are still, 109 people are still in Gaza. And second, they started to understand that what really released part of the hostages was the negotiation and the contacts and the diplomatic path and not the military path. So more and more people are understanding that this war is not bringing them anywhere. Of course, 20% of the population in Israel, which is the Palestinian Arab minority in Israel, are against this war. But we need more from the Jewish side also to be against the war. Lately, we managed to put together a big demonstration in Tel Aviv, which was the first demonstration against the war that was challenging the silencing policy that was led against especially the Palestinian citizens of Israel. You know, we were under a crackdown on not only on the citizens, the Arab citizens, but also the leadership. If me silenced in the Knesset, there were also former MKs and the head of the High Follow-Up Committee who were arrested just because they were on their way to have a small protest against the war. Many students were dismissed from school, from university, and people were dismissed from their jobs only because they published something that expressed sympathy to what's happening to the people in Gaza, to our people in Gaza. But today, for example, we challenged this silencing policy again, and we had a protest in Nazareth. Despite the warnings of the police and the fact that they wanted to avoid this protest, we insisted and we had this protest. Tomorrow, we will have a big meeting of different groups and organizations, anti-occupation, anti-war, and we are going to establish a big coalition against this war. We are not intending to bend for this silencing policy and terrorizing people who are against the war. We understand very clearly that crimes are committed and civilians are killed, and that the amounts of destruction is huge. And if the international community choose to be silenced, that's their problem. We are not going to be silenced, and we want to stand up against this war.
So, MK Aida, there are places where you still see in Israel criticism of the war, including Haaretz and Plus 972 magazine, journalists who have also appeared from there on our show. In addition, of course, to the concern about the hostages in Israel, now over 150 Israeli soldiers have been killed in Gaza. If you could talk about the impact of that as people in Israel see the costs to Israeli lives as this war goes on? Is there a sense within Israel of what it is that is being fought for?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned before, gradually more and more people are understanding that the war is not going to bring any security or any peace for both sides, including and mainly the Israeli side. More and more people understand that they cannot continue forever with this war, because there are implications of that war, not only in the meaning of losing lives. There are also injured soldiers. More than 5,000 soldiers have been injured. Some of them will stay handicapped for all of their lives. Families are seeing how their sons, the soldiers, are coming back from war traumatized and need psychological treatment. There are implications on the economy. We are going to face, there's a raise. Just yesterday, the poverty report that shows there is a raise in the percentages of people who are dropping down of the poverty line. And we are expecting a very difficult economic year to come because of this war. And people starting to ask the hard questions. why we need to continue this war if we are going to pay such a high price and still not reach any security. You have to understand also that people in the north of Israel, near my house, and in the south of Israel are not living in their homes because of this war.